Morning.
Morning. You wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I think 6 minutes.
Thank you. You may begin.
So again, good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jim Childress. I was appointed by the Campbell County Circuit Court to represent Quintus Marshall on this charge of making a material false statement on one of these forms required to purchase a firearm. Mr. Marshall, I guess first let me address the two assignments of error. I've got one assignment of error, and I think when you look through these briefs, my opening brief, Commonwealth's opening brief, and then the reply brief, you can see when I get the Commonwealth's brief, there's kind of an uh-oh moment, and that's based on not necessarily not giving court adverse authority that I knew about at the time. It's just inadequate research. So I looked at the Castleman case, did that reply brief simply so I could acknowledge that for the court, distinguish it the best way I could. Given those facts, I would like to rely on my brief on the first assignment of error and focus really on the second assignment of error. I would suggest that the two assignments of error are different ball games. They are not, even though similar, they are not the same. When you look at the first one, of course, we're interpreting federal code based on federal common law. And, of course, Castleman and all those cases would control that situation. When we're looking at this form that was used, Quintus Marshall is someone who was convicted of domestic assault and battery under 18.2-57.2. The Commonwealth in this case in the trial court admitted that prior conviction without objection, and that conviction said that he was convicted of assault and battery on a family or household member under that code section. If you look at the form that he filled out on the front page where he actually checks no, that question appears clear where it says, have you been convicted of a domestic assault and battery or assault and battery on a family or household member? However, when you look at the instructions, that instruction says that there must be force or use of force or attempted use of force.
Well, it adopts the same definition. The instruction is essentially the same definition, and so I don't know that there's as much difference between your two assignments. Now, the form here wasn't the B or C form, it was the federal form. It was the ATF form 4473, correct?
That's correct,
that's
yes.
What we're dealing with. Your only challenge, as I understand it, is that the evidence from the conviction establishes everything except force or use of force.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Then explain to me how your second assignment of error isn't any different than your first assignment of error in Castleman controls.
Because well,
it is a question whether it meets the definition of force or sufficient use or attempted use of physical force, I believe, is the statutory definition. That's a question of federal law, correct?
Well, I would say on the first assignment of error it is, and I think this court could interpret it under state law for the second assignment of error,
how?
Even though it's a federal code or the federal form.
How? Because this, because when with 18.2308.2:2K,
yes,
because we have to make this as complicated as possible, it says a form required under B or C above or any federal form required.
That's correct.
All right. This is a federal form that is required. If it meets the definition of use of force or attempted use of force, how does that not control? And by the way, you know, the Fourth Circuit agreed with your argument. They just got reversed.
They did, right.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, and back when I was in the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, that was what we there was an AG's opinion years ago that said you should amend these warrants to reflect that someone got slapped or kicked or punched or something like that. And, of course, Castleman changed that. So back to your argument on B and C versus a federal form.
I don't argue. I ask questions.
Based on your question, in subsection K, it does make that distinction between B and C or the federal form. In the indictment that charged Marshall, it doesn't mention the federal form. It says as in A or B and C in 308.2:2. And if you look at B and C, it refers you actually back to subsection A, which is a Virginia State Police approved form. So, and I think if they said a federal form, I would not necessarily concede that we have to use federal law, but I think that that's extremely persuasive for this court. But that's not what it says in the indictment. He was indicted under the language in B or C. It really doesn't even reference K, even though they use the language from K. So it doesn't say the federal form. So I think this court can say under Virginia Code section that he's alleged to have violated or that he's indicted for violating, under subsection K, they refer you back to really subsection A at the end of the day for the Virginia State Police form.
Well, as I understand the argument and the evidence presented, you don't dispute that the federal form, in this case, the ATF 4473, falls under the B or C requirement.
I do not dispute that.
Because it was approved by, form accepted by state police.
Correct, yes. Okay. And even if he, regardless of what it says, he's not going to be able to get a firearm because of this, and the federal, and it's based on the federal, state police are going to adopt that federal 921 rule. The issue is, did he make a material false statement, and is this court going to apply the rule for 921 under Castleman to say that he made a material false statement, when really the instructions under this one question don't say use of force or attempted use of force as defined by 921. It doesn't say that.
Well, but if you go further, the instruction also says, for example, assault and battery, which is exactly what he pled guilty to.
That's true, yes. And I think, unfortunately, to use the use of force, they should have just taken that language out of there. And I think if you just leave the question as it is, assault and battery of a family or household member, there's no question here. But they add that qualification that there's got to be use of force or attempted use of force, and I would suggest it changes things.
One of my former colleagues who's now on the Supreme Court convinced me that virtually every question of law can be answered by going back to Blackstone and starting with Blackstone. Assault and battery is a common law offense. And while there are lots of cases dealing with what constitutes assault and battery, they all indicate that battery requires some infliction of a hurt on another, which seems to me to be exactly what the federal form is talking about. You use the language, however slight, which is certainly found to indicate that you don't have to punch somebody in the jaw to commit assault and battery, but it still requires a corporal hurt.
Well, I would agree with the word hurt, but I'm not sure about corporal hurt because it could be an unwanted or offensive touching, which there's no bodily injury if we're going to say corporal hurt.
But it doesn't have to be a bodily injury to be an assault and battery under common law.
That's true, yes. And I think before Castleman, when we look back to Johnson, Scalia interpreted that statute to mean there had to be some sort of bodily injury through what they commonly used the word violence for. And that, you don't have that on just a normal offensive touching type situation.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. If I go up and I shoulder somebody, for instance, that's a slight touching, but it's a corporal hurt to a degree. It's a de minimis in many cases, but it is a violation, technical violation of the batteries law. So it doesn't matter how much it hurts. It just means, does it meet the common law definition, doesn't it?
Well, I think it was the Adams case that I put in my opening brief, and it was out of this court in 2000 that said the force that's used is not necessarily what is taken into consideration by the court when doing an assault and battery analysis. It's more on the intent of the actor and the touching. So not necessarily on the force itself.
Well, and the argument you make is essentially the argument that carried the day in White, which, ironically enough, was written for the Fourth Circuit by Judge Agee, so presumably somewhat familiar with what we're talking about that's specific to Virginia law. But then, of course, interestingly enough, the opinion that the Fourth Circuit recognized that Castleman overruled that opinion in White was written by Judge Keenan, also presumably familiar with the intricacies of all of this in Virginia law.
Right. Well, I think at the end of the day, if you have someone, just a lay person who goes in to buy a firearm and they read this instruction, as I would assume most people do, they don't necessarily understand the question, they say, well, this has to have use of force or attempted use of force. Are they going to automatically know? And if they check no, are we going to make them a felon based on that without further instructions on that form? And of course, that's not a sign of error whether he intentionally did it and didn't know or anything like that, but I would suggest that it would just not be proper to have someone be committed as a felony when it says there has to be use of force in common sense definition, not
the
necessarily legal definition.
He testified in this case, did he not?
He did.
And I don't recall that the Commonwealth asked him anything about what happened that led to that conviction?
They did not. But he admitted that he was charged. He was convicted. He thought it was going to be under first offender, but it was not. He was just mistaken on that, and the record, the document is clear on that.
But, and he did admit it involved his former spouse, which
yes.
solved the other potential definitional problem.
Yes.
If family Virginia's definition of family member were somehow different.
Yes, and we'll concede every other element of that was met. It's just really the force issue in this case.
And it may be, and I know you're in your rebuttal time, but just quickly, it may be that you made the dicta argument in
yes.
your reply brief, and I understand the situation you found yourself in.
Right.
Given the back and forth between Sotomayor for the majority and Justice Scalia and his footnote 5, which says, properly read, the following states wouldn't be included, and the majority says, oh no, we intend to include them.
Yes.
It seems to me that that becomes more than merely dicta. It does apply to 18. In fact, they were fighting over 18257, which I have a question from Ms. Campbell about that.
Yeah. And I think the subsequent case that was Voisin that comes out, and they say, not only are we including those, we include all reckless charges.
Which caused Justice Thomas to note, if you're texting right. on your phone, that conviction would, and run into somebody,
right.
that would be sufficient.
So, of course, that's another issue for my first assignment of error. So, all right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth in this appeal. I think it's already been discussed that the issue is very narrow. It's whether or not his statement was false based on the element of use of force.
Ms. Campbell, I have a question about the indictment. And I think your opponent has candidly conceded that it's not as much of a problem as it might have been. He was indicted for 18.2308.2:2K says, a form required by B or C or a form required by federal law. ATF Form 4473 is clearly required by federal law. Where is it required by under B or C? And he said the state police have adopted it, and so that probably solves the problem. If they had indicted him for just a violation of K and included the federal form language, there's no problem. But is it a form required by B and C? Or is it a form required by federal law?
My understanding, and I will admit I'm not sure I'm adequately prepared to answer your question, but my understanding was that it was the form that was adopted, and therefore the indictment is fine. I would happily look into this more for you and submit something after, but unfortunately that was my more simple understanding, and I apologize if I missed that. Turning back, it's clear the record that the defendant pled guilty to a misdemeanor, assault and battery on a family member. He, as Castleman, the court's already thoroughly discussed how Castleman applies. I agree with the court that it is more than dicta, and the language is very strong, and clearly Congress could not have intended to eradicate the common law definitions of assault and battery. And
let me ask you this question. We're dealing with 18.2, a conviction under 18.2-57.2,
yes, sir.
Which requires an assault and battery. And, of course, if you prove the battery, every battery necessarily includes an assault. That's common law. 18.257, which is also entitled assault and battery, is worded differently. It says an assault or an assault and battery. If you had a naked 18.257 conviction order, so you don't know whether it was for the conviction was obtained by proving the assault or proving the assault and battery, would that be sufficient?
I believe so, Your Honor.
But if we just have an assault, the irony is you can get an assault and battery conviction in Virginia by proving the assault and proving no battery or touching whatsoever, no physical force.
Certainly, Your Honor, but you actually also don't need you don't have to have a use of force. It is also just threatened use of force, if we're turning back to the definition of the
form. That's not a threatened use of force. It's an attempted use of force, I believe, isn't it? Isn't it the use or the attempted use of physical force?
Or attempted use of physical force or threatening with a threatening with a deadly weapon, which is, yes, another.
We can get assault without that.
Certainly.
So would a naked 18.257 conviction order be sufficient if the potential was it was only for an assault, even though it's entitled conviction, assault, and battery?
I think that it still could, Your Honor.
But it still has to be against a family or household.
Yes, it still has to be. That's what I'm trying to.
Which takes you to 57.2, which is in the conjunctive.
Just because it's the family member doesn't mean you will necessarily be charged under 57.2 for whatever reason. It could support a charge under 57.
Certainly, it could, Your Honor.
Okay, I've taken you too far afield.
I'm confused,
I'm
too.
I apologize, Your Honor. Turning back, I think it's clear from the record that the defendant was found guilty of a domestic violence case. He actually, as the court had noted, he did testify. The Commonwealth asked him if he understood the form. He said that he understood the form. There's no question that he didn't understand whether or not his conviction was an assault and battery. He just simply thought it went away for whatever reason. And I think that there is an inference that from the record that he wasn't able to redeem this gun in the end, because this is the type of conviction that we don't want people getting firearms for, people who have been convicted of misdemeanor assault and battery against their family members and violating protective orders. So ultimately, this form is to read out and have people like the defendant answer yes to that question, not no. He did make a material false statement on that form when he checked no, that he had not been convicted of a misdemeanor domestic violence conviction. Granting all reasonable inferences in favor of the Commonwealth, I think the evidence is sufficient and the trial court was not plainly wrong. If the court has no further questions to confuse me more, I would ask that the court affirm.
Thank you very much.
And this is a very narrow issue, and the court has heard my arguments and what we're asking for, so I'll rest unless there are any other questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to greet counsel, then we're going to take a brief recess. And when we return, we'll take up Blankenship versus Commonwealth.